Welcome to Raising Playful Tots. Raising Playful Tots is a weekly podcast about mums making the most of early years playtime. I'm your host, Melissa. Welcome to the play space. It's here that we focus on play that we want to see and experience in our homes. We cover play-related topics to inspire, teach, challenge, and lead us to have a great time with these kids of ours. You have children under 5 years old? This is the podcast for you. Introduce a new play idea. Welcome to another episode of Raising Playful Tots. Glad you could stop by today. If you're new to the show, welcome, and hi to the regular playmates like Alison and Tim. Thanks for sharing your feedback this week. There's plenty of room on the floor as we play the matching game with milk jug tops. Last week's show, I interviewed Juliette Robertson from Creative Star Learning on the growing phenomena of outdoor preschools and a book recommendation for personal, social and emotional development. So if you missed that one, pop on over to the blog where you can listen to that show and find the archive of all the shows at www.raisingplayfultots.com/shows. This week's show is with Ashley Merriman. She is the author of the New York Times bestseller, Nurture Shock, New Thinking About Children. It's a powerful book and our interview today. So I hope you'll stick around. I'll be right back after this short break.
Look at all the cars. Lots of colored cars. Ah, there's a blue one. Isn't it pretty? Ooh, look how fast that red one's going. It's red like that stop sign. Like my jacket.
This is a 38-year-old man.
My jacket's not a car, is it? Is my jacket a car? My jacket is red, but it doesn't go fast.
He may sound a little strange to you and me.
Vroom. Vroom, vroom.
But to his 2-year-old son, who's interested in cars and colors, he makes perfect sense.
That's the sound cars make.
When you talk with your child, you build vocabulary, and learning starts long before school does. So follow their lead. Take simple everyday moments, like eating dinner or just watching cars go by, and turn them into learning moments.
Ooh, look, red car!
Yes! And it's moving awfully fast.
Blue car!
Yes! The man in the red car is about to meet the man in the blue car. Get himself a pretty pink ticket.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. For more tips, go to bornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
With Poe Bronson, Ashley Merriman is the author of the New York Times bestseller, Nurture Shock, New Thinking About Children. Ashley Merriman has written for publications like Washington Post, Newsweek, The Guardian UK, and has appeared on dozens of TV and radio shows around the world. Bronson and Merriman have won 9 national awards for their reporting on the science of human development. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm excited to have you on the show to talk about praise, which is the first chapter in your book.
Mm-hmm.
After reading the chapter, I think most people would be amazed that they could have missed the mark on praise for so long. Why can our instincts about children be so off the mark?
Well, I think that they're actually not instincts. I mean, instincts are that you have a natural predisposition to want to protect your child. If your child is hurting, you want to take care of them. But how we actually do that, how we do protect them, how we do take care of them, that's really up to us. And there are ideas sort of in a cultural zeitgeist that we say, oh, that's what it is. And when you hear everyone's doing it for a while, it just sort of seems natural to you. But if you had asked your mom, have you scheduled a play date for your child? She would have looked at you like you were cracked, right?
Yes.
What is a play date?
Yes, exactly.
And it's not that she didn't care or that you weren't playing, but that's sort of, but now we would take that as a given, right?
Yes.
But that's as much because, you know, mothers are working and kids are isolated and they're in smaller families than the fact that we think that the best way to raise a child is a structured play date.
Right.
And praise is in that as well. If you had asked your mother or certainly your grandmother, should you praise your child all of the time? Should you tell them things were wonderful? Again, she would have looked at you like you were insane and she'd wondered what she had done wrong in her raising of you that you had asked such a question. So that's the thing, is that we have this idea of the best thing to do, but right now it's really cultural and sort of overpraising is a fad.
Yes,
basically.
You're right. Let's talk a little bit more about praise then, because we all want our children to succeed. Let's think of a situation. Perhaps you can unpack it and tell us the most effective way to use praise in this particular situation. So we've got a girl called Kaylee, and she's busy working on her block towers, and she's managed to get that third block on top. Not just one tower, but now she has three towers almost in a row. And she's been attempting it on and off now for about a few days. And today she's finally made it, and she turns to you with that big, you know, I've done it kind of face. What might be a good expression and why?
Well, the first thing I need to ask is, how old is Kaylee?
Okay.
Because if she's under, say, 18 months, she may not necessarily know all of the words you're saying anyway. Really young children, toddlers, don't understand words in the middle of a sentence. They only get the first part and the end part. They're listening to sort of a real-life version of Mad Libs. So they're looking for... And really, I mean, you know, like, my favorite example is they don't know what the word light socket is, but they understand don't touch, because they hear don't touch all the time.
Yes.
So when they're running to the light, they hear don't touch, they know they're supposed to stop. So some of it is, how old are they? Because literally they can't hear what you're saying.
Okay.
So how old would Kaylee be?
Kaylee's three.
Okay. If Kaylee is three, I would tell her, wow, honey, you actually did that. You've been working really hard on that. I like the way that you have all of them in a row. And, oh, look, you have different colors on the blocks. That's really cool. Would you tell me about what you did? So some of praise and some of the best engagement is not actually praise, but asking them to tell you why something is really great. The important thing in this scenario is that this was something she was working on and had difficulty and actually did it. If Kaylee has now for 3 months been stacking blocks and she turns to you and looks with a big smile, you don't need to praise her for that.
Yes.
You could acknowledge, oh, I see, look what you're doing. You're playing with your blocks again. But you don't need to praise her for something she's actually already mastered. And that, I think, is the key. I hear about, you know, parents in New York who cheer when their kids make it down a slide. Not because their child is afraid of heights and afraid of doing it, but because they slid. I'm like, gravity works. You don't need to congratulate them. They're not Newton. They have not figured this out. Gravity works. So, you know, that's the key, is this a true thing? If it's the first time your little kid has walked across the floor without falling down, I would expect you to cheer, because you really did that. If you're still doing that when the kid's 16, there's a problem.
Yes.
Right?
Okay.
So that's the key, is, you know, for those first things. But I didn't say, oh, you're so smart. I didn't say, oh, you're so clever, Kaylee. I said, wow, you worked really hard on that. And I also said, you stacked them very neatly and in a row. So tomorrow, if I'm not in the room, she still knows she liked it when I stacked things in a row and it was neat and I should try that again.
Right. Very good.
So that's the key, is giving them these specific things that they can actually replicate in the future.
That's great. Well, if we look a bit further on afield now, that we know that the early years are a foundation for what comes next. If we continue to use the well done, good job, you're great that you just mentioned, what is the long-term effect that you've noted with this repeated use of those words, praising for intelligence, for children older than five?
Well, the longitudinal research actually shows that preschool children about the age of two or three who hear you're so clever all the time, by six and seven have already decided that the world is based on things that you can either do or you can't. That you either have an innate ability to do something or you're just out of luck. And it's not about learning. It's not about trying new things or mastering things. It's already being fallen into this camps of you're the talented, you're the special one, or you're not. And the problem with telling kids you're so wonderful all the time is, for one thing, that's not true. Right?
Yes.
Kids make mistakes.
Yeah.
And the fact that they stacked blocks does not make them Albert Einstein. And we want to give kids room to grow. So we don't want to tell them you're so wonderful. And we don't want them to be writing themselves off. I can't do this. Therefore, I won't even try something else because I might make a mistake. So they become risk averse. Except, you know, you may say, well, my kid is actually wonderful, and that actually may be true. But what happens if they hear that all the time?
Yes.
What if your kid really is the next Albert Einstein, and he's told constantly, you're brilliant, you're brilliant, you're brilliant, you're brilliant? We have stories of companies in the United States that hand out gift cards for coffee if you show up to work on time.
Oh.
When I was a kid, if you showed up to work on time, you got to get a job. And if you showed up late, you were fired.
Yes.
And I think actually in this economy, we're going back to the, if you show up late, we don't say, oh, that's fine. We understand you're so special that you shouldn't be bothered with such menial tasks. And we're going to, you're fired. And we don't want kids to have that first experience. What? Yeah. We, you know, there is some evidence that kids are increasingly narcissistic. They are increasingly believing that they are so wonderful that you must accommodate everything they do. But truly, I'm not so worried about that. What I'm worried about is I really want kids to know that it's okay to make a mistake.
Right.
The point of making mistakes is to learn from them. And to me, that's where I actually think that if you constantly tell kids, you're so special, you're so wonderful, you're so talented, that they start thinking, if I try something new and I screw up. You know, if a child comes home and says, look, Mom, I got an A. Oh, my gosh, you're so clever. Tomorrow they come home, look, Mom, I had another quiz today and I got a B. Oh, well, sorry, that thing about being clever yesterday, not so much.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
If you're brilliant from getting one good mark, then you might be an idiot because you got one bad mark.
Yes.
That's what's going on in the kid's mind.
Yes. That's hard.
It makes perfect sense, right? It's just not what we were thinking.
Yes. Yeah. It's a really difficult one to stop that. It's kind of like a tick that you have, isn't it? When you say well done and good job and you're great, it's like you have to rewrite that script that's in your head so that those things don't come out of your mouth all the time.
The good news is it's hard for us. It's not hard for the kids.
Right.
I run a program where we help children with schoolwork, on a volunteer basis. Kids just come in and say, here's my reading or my mathematic homework. Can you help me with my algebra? And we were, you know, these are all kids from very poor backgrounds, struggling in families. And I was really worried that some little child would say, Ashley, that's what they call me. Ashley, you used to tell me I'm smart and you don't anymore. Do you not think I'm smart? At which point I would have thrown myself off the cliff, right? Because the last thing I would have done is hurt these little kids' feelings. But I stopped saying you're smart. And if they worked hard on their homework, I said, wow, you worked really hard on that. And they don't complain, you should have told me I was smart. When I say you worked really hard on it, they look at me and go, yeah, I know I did.
Ah.
And they recognize that I was actually paying attention.
Yes.
It is a verbal tick. You are actually very right, because it's so easy to just keep going while you're on the phone. Yeah, honey, wonderful. That's brilliant. I keep going, right?
Yes, exactly.
Right? But at a certain point, you've turned them out and they're turning you out.
Yeah, that can be a problem.
So the good thing is, yes, it takes practice on your end, but the kids will be fine with this new pattern.
When we look forward to how praise is used for children who are falling behind as a way of encouragement, mm-hmm. and even if we look mm-hmm. at older siblings who watch us talking to the younger ones, similar type of interaction, encouragement. What impression does praise have on those children?
That is a fabulous question. And I think the important thing that the scientists want you to know is that praise is recognition for genuine accomplishment. Encouragement is try something new, keep going, don't give up. Those are not the same. And the real problem is when you actually use praise for encouragement. When you're actually praising someone, but they didn't actually achieve anything. Right? You're really saying, try harder, you can do it, but instead you're saying, oh, you're so wonderful, it's so wonderful. They haven't finished this yet. They only have 4 of their spelling words down, and they've got 6 more to go.
Yes.
So what happens is they've looked and found, especially in the United States, but we've seen this research replicated really around the world, kids hear so much empty praise, they don't even believe it past age 7. And by around 11 or 12 years old, kids actually start thinking that praise is a sign you're worried about them. The kid who's really doing well, you leave alone. The kid who's struggling is the one who hears, you're so special. So they actually start thinking that this is a danger sign to get compliments rather than the fact that this is an actual accomplishment.
Oh.
And I know, and from working with my kids, I can tell you, absolutely, I 100% did that.
Mm-hmm.
The kids who were doing really well, they knew they were doing really well. I didn't need to tell them that.
Yes.
They knew their grades. They knew that they didn't need help on that piece of homework. It was the kids who were looking at me with this terrified blank look on their face. And when I would say, oh, you're so smart, you're so brilliant, they didn't believe me.
Oh.
So now I have lost credibility with both of those children.
Right?
Yes. Now the child who's struggling doesn't believe me because they know they're struggling. And the kid who's doing well says, she just says stuff like that to manipulate the other kid. I don't need to pay attention to that. I mean, he may not articulate manipulate,
yes,
but that's what he's feeling.
Yes, exactly. You're right. When I think about it, when I was teaching, it was the same thing. You could see it in their eyes came out. You would just say it.
Mm-hmm.
Today I'm talking to Ashley Merriman, author, writer, and former attorney who now directs a small all-volunteer tutoring program for inner-city kids in Los Angeles. You can find articles connected to the book Nurture Shock by visiting the website nurtureshock.com. They're also on Twitter and Facebook as Nurture Shock. So Ashley, how does excessive praise distort children's motivation?
It kills it. That's a tad bit of a hyperbole, but not really that much. Because excessive praise, you know, the most famous researcher on this is Carol Dweck. And she's actually done experimental studies where she just gave kids one line of praise. That's it. She wouldn't do the constant thing. She would just tell one kid, you're so smart, and the other kid, you tried hard. That should have had no effect, right?
Yes.
But instead, it, for the next hour, changed the course of how children worked, how hard they were going, what their persistence was. Kids who had been told, you are so smart, at the beginning of an experiment, told her at the end that they would be more likely to cheat. Why? Because you're so clever, you're so smart, you're so special. Those give kids this idea that, as I was mentioning earlier, any mistake becomes really an indictment on who they are. So they would rather not try the hard thing. They'd rather do the easy thing because they know they'll get more praise.
Right.
The kids I work with, you know, I had a second grader on Saturday, and she was reading one of the easiest pre-kinder books that we have. I don't even think it was to the level of a Dr. Seuss Cat in the Hat. And she's in second grade, and I said, honey, isn't that easy for you? She said, uh-huh. I'm like, isn't that kind of boring? But they like knowing that they're doing well.
Yes.
I tell my high school students, I can write you a math test that you're going to get 100% on. I'll just give you 25 questions, and every one of them is 2 plus 2.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think that's, you know, it really teaches children that they end up choosing something, choosing something to do, choosing something to learn based on their belief that they're going to have praise and recognition for it, not because they want to challenge themselves, not because they want to learn or grow. Okay. That's really where the excessive praise is a problem.
Okay.
In fact, some researchers have found that children who grew up with excessive praise can't pick a major at university.
Oh.
Because they don't want to commit to something that 2 or 3 years down the road they realize they're not good at.
Oh, right. Yeah. Wow. It has such a long-term effect. You would have just never have thought that it could go reach that far.
Well, and the longer kids do succeed, there are kids who are naturally or even preternaturally smart. They just get it, right?
Yes.
But the longer those kids hear "You're so wonderful," the harder it is they fall when they inevitably do meet some difficulty.
Yes. Yes.
It doesn't matter how brilliant your kid is, at some time they're going to realize calculus is hard.
Yes.
Or, I mean, it doesn't matter what level. There's an American psychologist who says, please don't let it be that the first time your child had a difficulty was when they were in college.
Yes. Oh, gosh.
You know, it's fine if they skin their knees because they've got to know that they'll live through it.
Yes. You're so right.
Yeah. 100% you agree with her.
I was going to say that you were talking about mistakes. I think that's really nice to go on to the next question, where sometimes we can overlook mistakes because we don't want to be critical or nitpick at anything. So we concentrate on praising what they can do. And you mentioned a few examples in your book that children need to discuss mistakes. Can you explain that a little further?
Mm-hmm. Well, for one thing, if you never talk about the mistakes, if you only talk about the good things, you're giving a message that mistakes, failure is so terrible, we dare not speak of it. Remember, like in the 50s, when
yes.
it was inappropriate to talk about the fact that someone had cancer, so you would just say, he's not well.
Right? Yes, yeah, yeah.
Right? That was, you know, well, that's sort of what we're telling kids about mistakes and failure. If we tell them about how wonderful they are, but they, you know, the child who was in a school play, oh, you remembered all of your lines, and you paid attention to people, and it was lovely, but you neglect the fact that they fell down when they entered the stage.
Yes.
The child's going to think, that was so terrible. We have to pretend I didn't do it? Really?
Mm.
And they will learn that that's the important message. The other thing to remember is that kids want to learn about mistakes because they want to learn how to come back from them.
Yes.
And if you never talk about a child's mistake, you can never help them figure out what's the best thing to do. Again, I was talking to a couple of my kids this weekend, and I said, you know, mistakes are good because you're learning. But that's the point of a mistake, to learn from it.
Yes.
If you're not learning from it, then there's no point in making one. Well, we all know kids will make mistakes. So it's having them have that opportunity to say, I can do this, I can recover. It's interesting, and this to me, I think, is even more powerful than the sort of natural tell a child they're wonderful. A researcher named Nancy Darling was telling me the common mistake parents make, especially with older kids, but even younger kids would do this, that when a child makes a mistake, you know, you're sitting in the bed with them, and they're telling you about how bad it was, and say, oh, well, you know, when I was a kid, I did something so much worse. And Nancy says that's a huge mistake, because this is a moment about helping that kid with that problem they're having.
Yeah.
And instead, what you're saying is, your problem's not important, let me tell you, because this is really all about me.
Yeah.
It's not about you, it's about them.
Yes, you've been in my room.
If they ask you, did you ever do something like this, then I think it's appropriate to answer that question.
Right.
But it's still not about you. It's still about helping the child learn, how will you do this differently? And one of the other things you don't want to do is promise future success. You know, if your little boy missed the goal at the beginning of the football match, another common thing is, I know you'll make it next time.
Yes. How do you know?
Well, how do you know? You don't, right? If you have crystal balls in the UK, please send me one, because that would be fantastic. But, you know, check and see if, you know, Rowley has one in Scotland or something. Yeah. Send me one. But we don't know. And if the child believed you, if that was how they worked through the mistake, was by leaving your promise that they won't do it again, when they miss the goal the next time, they're never going to ask you again how to work through a mistake, because their answer is, Mommy lies to me.
Yeah. Wow, it's really powerful.
Yeah, and but also I think that these do set up your relationship, right? If 5 and 6 and 7 years old, the child says, you're not someone reliable, is that the person, are you going to be coming, are they going to come to you when they're 16?
Yes.
You know, my mom would tell me I was wonderful. My mom, you know, mom, teenager now, he doesn't like me. Oh, you're so wonderful. There's other fish in the sea. He just doesn't know how special you are.
Oh, yes.
Okay, A, I wasn't that special. B, that wasn't helpful. And did I go back to her the next time I had boy trouble?
No.
No, because I knew mom would give me platitudes that quote-unquote moms are supposed to say.
Yeah.
So if I have a teenager who says something like that to me, I say, well, honey, maybe we shouldn't be texting 16 times an hour. Take it down a notch. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, but they do. We really, you know, we give them this empty, you're so wonderful stuff. It doesn't help them in any concrete or even larger way.
Yes.
And it just makes us look like idiots.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Let's look at encouraging children. So, you know, they've come across these problems. Sometimes they fail. Sometimes they make mistakes. How do we encourage children to work harder when they come against these problems?
I tell children, you know, I do focus on, did you work hard? Did you try your best? And if they say yes, then I say, okay, well, maybe there's something, is there something you got lost on? Where did you not understand it? A lot of times when they're struggling, it's not about praise. It is about asking the child, what are the problems you're having? And sometimes it's really hard to get that out of them. They don't want to tell you, because that's admitting to them, to themselves and to you, that they are having a problem. They'd so much rather say, everything's fine, leave me alone, go help someone else. So giving them that room to actually talk about the difficulties, I think, is fine. One of my favorite techniques that I learned while I was working on the researching of the book Nurture Shock is called scaffolding. And in scaffolding, what you do is wherever that kid is, that's where you start and you build on the technique with them. But you never say, here's a division problem, show me what you can do. Because now the kid's on the spot, and, you know, we all know, if you're already not sure of something, the last thing you want to do is have someone say, okay, we'll do it in front of me, right? That's
yes.
Going to work out.
Yeah.
So rather than putting the kid on the spot and making it in a test, what you would do in a division problem is, you know, lots of books often will do that sort of thing where they go 20 and then a division sign by 5.
Yes.
And then solve the problem. So you have the kid do 6 problems where they're just taking that formula and setting it up as a division problem with the divisor in the right place and with the divin in the right place. That's all they do. So that's they go, oh, I know how to do that. And by the time they're almost a little bored, and then you finish the rest of the problem, but you talk it out each step. You know, 5 goes into 20, 4 times, 4 great, I write 4 up here, and then I write this there. And then you go, oh, can you write the 4 for me? You know, because you've done it a couple times. So they actually keep taking piece by piece over as they master it, but they don't actually even know that that's what they've done.
Yeah.
And within an hour, I've had, you know, 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds burst into tears and say, I never thought I would be able to divide problems, and now I can do it.
Wow.
But if you had asked them, show me what you can do an hour or two earlier, they would have cried and left the room in another way.
Yes.
So that's the key. And sometimes it's not about that overt encouragement, but just using the thing you know they can do and then step by step having them build on those skills.
Right. Well, The Inverse Power of Praise is the first chapter in your book, Nurture Shock. Which other chapter did you find the most fascinating to research or had the most impact on you?
The fascinating to research part is a fairly unanswerable question because I was completely fascinated by everything we were learning. We were learning about how self-control and self-regulation are more predictive of success than an IQ test, and how bad IQ tests are to predict things. But where is intelligence in the brain? Isn't that a great question?
It's right? Amazing,
I mean, we know where your brain lights up when you think of God, but we can't find intelligence.
Yeah.
Irony.
Yeah.
So it's because intelligence isn't in a part of the brain. It's the interactions of the parts of the brain.
Yes.
So I loved that, but I actually think that there's a chapter that on a daily basis affects my life is the sleep chapter. And because I used to work in politics, and in politics we very much believe that sleep when you're dead is the appropriate mantra.
Yes.
And I had a number of the world's leading sleep experts say, if you keep saying that, we take it out on the other end. And I kept saying, hey, that's not so fun. And to me, the sleep chapter just constantly blew me away. The fact that a 8 or 9 year old can lose 2 years of cognitive development on an IQ test if they've missed 15 minutes of sleep a night for 3 nights in a row.
Wow.
I mean, 15 minutes, that's nothing, right?
No.
That's brush your teeth. Oh, I forgot to, you know, I wanted these PJs and not the other PJs.
Yes.
2 years of cognitive development. There are children who don't get enough sleep in preschool are more likely to be obese as preschoolers, 300% more likely, and they're more likely to be obese when they're 32.
Wow.
Because sleep regulates the metabolism and the hormones for processing hunger, satiation, and actually growing. You grow when you're asleep. Because otherwise it would be really confusing.
Yes.
It's like, wait, a minute ago it was so much harder for me to reach. So I think the sleep chapter is almost terrifying to me. Are you sleep deprived?
No.
A lot of moms are.
No,
no,
I'm
you're
doing
not?
Really well. That's one thing that I had on my New Year's goals this year was to make sure that I got the right amount of sleep, because it makes all the difference to me. Having had 3 boys, and I just knew that when I was sleep deprived, nursing during the night, my days were wrecked. And so it's something I really value now, is to have a good night's sleep.
Well, would you like a pop quiz to see if you're right?
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
And if you're listening to the podcast, take the quiz, but don't cheat and listen to her answers. Listen to your answers.
Okay,
we'll do it that way.
Okay.
All right, complete the following sentence logically. The boy walked his...
Oh, the boy walked his dog.
Complete the following sentence illogically. The boy flew his...
ship.
Okay, so if you are sleep deprived, you take longer and longer and longer to answer that question. And if you're really sleep deprived, you answer with kite or plane or butterfly.
Okay.
And you will insist to me that those answers are correct. And I've had people in a room, I swear a bunch of your listeners went, it's kite. I know it's kite. It's the boy flew his kite. And that's because one of the first symptoms of sleep deprivation is perseveration. When you're stuck on the wrong answer, even if you know it's the wrong answer, but you can't switch to the right one.
Okay.
So that you can use that as a pop quiz when you're in a play date with the moms and they're saying they're so tired. That's how to find out how exhausted they are. But good for you. You're on the right track.
Oh, brilliant. Oh, I've had a blast talking to you about praise. Today I've been talking to Ashley Merriman, writer, author and speaker, about praise from her book, Nurture Shock. You can find out more about the book and what's coming up next by visiting nurtureshock.com. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you.
I'll be right back after this short break.
This is Judy Johnston from the Tessie and Tab Reading Club, and you're listening to Raising Playful Tots.
Welcome back to the show. I mentioned Alison and Tim at the top of the show. Both wrote an email, or it was a message on Facebook, sharing some ideas about a show that they would like, a future show. And I really appreciate that. I appreciate your comments, guys, and I'm busy working on the ideas that you gave for a future show. So if you would like to contact the show, there's lots of different ways that you can do that, from writing on the Facebook wall, which is Raising Playful Tots, that's where you'll find us, or if you're on Twitter, at Play Activities, that's all one word, you can tweet us. I love hearing about your ideas and your thoughts. This week, I'm excited to share that I have a new thing on the website. It's a voicemail message. Unlike the voicemail message I had before, when you had to dial in with a physical phone, I'm trying out a new way. This new option, you have to leave a message right on the page. That's right, no dial-up, no phones, no using a physical number. So you just pop on over to the blog. Okay, let's just do that right now. So you just put in raisingplayfultots.com. And look on the right-hand side, there's a big blue button that's floating that says click voicemail. And then you'll see a big green button. And then you click that button to record your message. So you can now tell me about last week's show, what your thoughts were. You can tell me a funny story. You can request a topic that's close to your heart that you'd really like to know some more information about. You can maybe even contact me because you want to be on the show and share some information. Maybe you've seen something that you really like and you want to share that. You might want to give feedback and tell me what you think about the show and how long you've been listening, how long you've been subscribed, what you like, what you don't like. You might be able to tell me how many shows that you've been listening to, which ones that you've really liked, all from the actual website. So after the message is recorded, I can retrieve your message and I can listen to it. I also have the ability to edit the message. So if you make a mistake, you can edit the message too. You can just delete it and that's no problem. Or you can re-record. That's completely up to you. When I've called in before for voice line messages, sometimes you get all tongue-tied and you meant to say something, and that's okay. You can just call back and you can just say, and the host at the other end is quite able to edit or change the recording usually. And we certainly have that capacity over here. So it doesn't matter what time zone you're in, because actually there are so many different time zones of you that listen right now. So that's pretty brilliant. It doesn't matter because it's not a live personal answer. It's just straight to voicemail. So whether you live in Canada or Australia, China or any of the Americas, from UK all the way to Japan, from South Africa to Norway, and we have people that are listening in all of those places, it's the same way that we access the site. And it's the same price for everyone. Free. So this is a new service for us and for the company, so we're just trying it out to see whether it's something that you all would like, another form of being able to contact us and share your ideas. So there it is. Go to the website, Raising Playful Tots, click on the big blue button, then click on the big green button and have your say. And I hope to hear from you this week. Thanks for the survey answers. There's still time to give your answers to this really short survey, and you can find that at raisingplayfultots.com/survey. I'm off to my first conference of the year, all about the early years, Nursery World, this week. So this week I get to play. If you've enjoyed this week's show with Ashley Merriman, don't forget to visit her fab website. I'll have a link to her book along with lots of other books that we mention in the show in our Amazon store. I don't know if many of you know that we have an Amazon store affiliate listed on our site. So all of the books and authors, all the books that authors recommend and books that authors have written, I try and include those all into that shop. And you can find that at raisingplayfultots.com/Amazon. I do get a small compensation if you start your Amazon shopping from there. I bought the book and have read it cover to cover. Well, Kindle to Kindle. Is that another way of saying it? I bought it on the Kindle to read it, and I've read it from, how do you say that now? Cover to cover? Yes, from the beginning all the way to the end. It was really good. It's changed a lot of what I do, and it's one of my top reads for 2012, for sure, for sure. All the links that we've talked about in today's show are in the show notes, and you can find them at raisingplayfultots.com/86. Take care, and thanks for choosing to listen to the show. You've been listening to Raising Playful Tots, show number 86. Come over and play next week. Until then, find time for some unplugged play. Join with me each week as we share, learn and laugh together about making the most of early childhood playtime. Goodbye.